Chapter 21, Snake in Their Midst.
Daddy, help me!
The shrill scream echoed back and forth, amplified and distorted by the curved walls of the tunnel. Ed's breath locked in his throat. Alicia's voice was unmistakable, and he looked over at Hughes, seeing the man's confusion give way to terror. His face was ghost white, and his lips were parted around the words he did not have the voice to speak. Green eyes searched the darkness in vain, and Ed swallowed tightly before turning away, unable to face the man's disbelief and despair. Clumsy, staggering footsteps, barely audible, were already getting fainter, sprinting deeper into the labyrinth of sewers under Central, while the adults could only stand there, paralyzed by fear. This was no longer just a gruesome mission. This was personal. Now there were not just nameless, faceless victims. A little girl they all knew, had all watched grow day by day and year by year, was running for her life. She was lost and alone in the dark where every shadow could hide a monster. And Ed knew in the pit of his stomach that she didn't stand a chance. Bones clattered as Hughes tore himself free of his shock, lunging forward and slithering down the side of the nest to land with a splash in one of the fetid puddles beyond. It was the trigger for the others to shake themselves into action. The click of Roy's fingers was like a gunshot. Light bloomed instantly, trailing in ribbons along the slimy walls and unwinding into the darkness. Flames lent heat to the air, but they did nothing to drive away the prickling ice that worked its way up and down Ed's spine. Shadows jumped and twitched, skittering back and forth like formless black ghosts as Hughes broke into a sprint. He dashed through the water and slipped in the muck as he ran blindly further into the sewers, leaving the others to follow as best they could. Alicia! It was a frantic cry, raw and cracked around the edges, but it was unheeded. Alicia, where are you? Ed strained to hear any kind of reply, but there was only the tattoo of their footsteps and the splash of water around them. Strange patterns of light and dark twisted along the wall, and Ed noticed more arrays etched into the stonework. Some were no bigger than his thumbnail, but others spanned the tunnel from floor to ceiling, etching eerie designs in the bricks. Ever since he had set eyes on this place, had seen the sad heap of bones and the scraps of skin, something had been stirring in his mind. His dread was compounded by a weary sense of recognition. Something in his head had seen this before. It knew a creature that shed dappled skin and left nothing but the bones of its prey behind. Yet the knowledge stayed tantalizingly out of his reach, leaving him with nothing more certain than a lingering fear that tainted everything with its touch. What the hell was this thing?
Lamia!
Kaleo's whisper of terror was an unexpected answer in his mind. Ed stumbled, reeling as the memories flooded his vision, blocking out everything else and robbing him of his senses. Blindly, he reached for the wall, looking for something to anchor him to reality as he was swept away, dragged by the inescapable riptide of the gate's consciousness into the heart of its recollections. He stood in the arch of the threshold, dwarfed by the vaulted pillars of stone. The doors were whole, thrown wide like the wings of a bird, but they already bore signs of Carmine's assault. There were shallow scratches in the wood, and darker stains mottled the grain like cancer. This was the past, he was certain, but how far back from the present day was it? A year? A decade? A century? More. Kaleo's voice was tainted with something older, wiser, and Ed knew that it was both the boy and the gate speaking. It was 437 years after the fall of Babylon, but this is an entirely different part of the world. Ed opened his mouth to ask questions, but invisible fingers touched his lips, firmly demanding his silence. A snarl of annoyance growled in his throat, and he bit back heated words. Just because he hosted part of the damn gate didn't mean it could order him around. He was about to argue when the misty golden veils of the plane parted. Power crackled through the air, and a thin seam opened in the black haze, revealing a cerulean sky and a sea dappled gray and green. Ed could see a marina, where masts of boats moved in lazy harmony with the swell of the ocean. The wind reached his nose, scented with salt and sun-baked sand. It made him think of siestas and a cool beer in the evening, when the heat of the day finally waned enough to be bearable. As he watched, a butterfly fluttered through, wings flashing with blues and purples as it danced erratically towards the gate. One wing brushed his cheek as light and hesitant as a kiss, before the shadows reached out, cupping the creature in its grip and whisking it from sight. Abruptly, the scene in the rift changed, racing along cobbled streets before it settled on a house. Sandstone was warm and mellow in the afternoon sunlight, and morning glories unfurled blue petals over the brickwork. The door, old wood, bleached almost white by the sun, stood open a crack, revealing a glimpse of darkness in the midst of the summer's day. Sobbing reached his ears, heartbroken, fractured gasps. A woman was speaking, her words choking and tight as she wept. It wasn't Amstrand, but he could still understand what she was saying. It was a simple question, asked again and again.
Why? Why? Why?
The air around the gate stirred, sending the golden fog into whirls as three small figures emerged. Two boys and a girl approached, clinging to one another. There was blood on their clothes, and fresh tear tracks marked their cheeks. Desperately, Ed reached out, wishing he could stop them, could somehow make them turn around and go back. But they slipped through his fingers, stumbling hesitantly into the waiting maw of the gate, and vanishing into the blackness at its heart. "Her children," Kaleo said quietly. "Lamia was human once. Remember that." A hand, petite and warm, splayed across his back, shoving him hard. In three steps he was through, away from the gate and into the place beyond. It was so real that he struggled to believe it was just a memory. The sun touched his skin, making him long to sprawl in the sparse grass and soak up its rays. He could taste the salt on the air and hear the distant cries of gulls. Boats sailed through the impossibly bright sea, their sails full and their prows cutting a white swath through the gently lapping waves. The house had been built on the cliff top, and a dusty track wound its way towards the door. Cautiously, Ed walked up to it, narrowing his eyes as the wind breathed dust into his face and stirred the flowers, filling the air with their perfume. There was no one about, but as he approached, he could hear the woman's cries becoming tighter and more panicked. Her gasping breaths carried to his ears, and he heard the low growl of the man's voice. Pushing the door open, he stared around the shady interior, ignoring everything but the three prone bodies on the floor. The children. Each had been killed quickly and efficiently. Some people might have said it was merciful, but all he could see was the blood. All he could think of was their fear. Who had done this? Perfect. The man's voice came from off to the left, and in a few steps Ed stood at a second doorway, staring at the array complex that had been drawn on the floor. It was one of the most complicated he had ever seen, but even without the gate, in his head he would have recognized some of the elements of it. He had seen similar single-circle designs in Tucker's notes. This was nothing to do with elemental transmutation, and everything to do with biology. How many times had he touched on the same kind of thing when struggling to get Al's body back? He had spent too many late nights in the library, scanning pages of unspeakable, forbidden alchemy, not to know what this was about. In the middle of the design, the woman sat, rocking back and forth as she sobbed brokenly. Her blood-stained hands were pressed to her face as grief filled the room with each of her short, hacking breaths. She had held the bodies, he realized, clung to the last remains of her children as if she could hang on to their lives through something as simple as touch. Isn't that what anyone would do? Isn't that what he'd done? Clutching at his mother's unresponsive hand as Al cried himself sick? It was an automatic reaction, a futile attempt to stop the inevitable. It was hard for any sane person to believe that a corpse was nothing but meat. Something moved inside the array, twitching sluggishly as it tried to find some warmth to heat its cold blood. The snake stared with chilling eyes, its tongue darting out to taste the air as it slowly moved over to the woman's feet, curling around her ankles. As thick as her bare thighs and hideously long, the reptile could not have been light, but the woman ignored it, acting as if she was alone. It was like she could not see any of what was around her, as if she couldn't comprehend the danger she was in. A man knelt at the far edge of the circle, watching her with passionate eyes. His handsome face was an emotionless mask for his insanity. Blood marked his clothes, and there was a crude knife at his side, still sticky with red fluid. They deserve to die. You know that, didn't you? Those brats were the only thing standing between us. Now we have forever. It happened so quickly that Ed barely had time to blink. One moment the woman was weeping, the next she had lunged toward the man, fingers knotted into claws and eyes wild and bloodshot. She screeched unintelligibly, struggling against the weight of the serpent that was still coiled around her legs as she tried to reach the bastard who had murdered her children. The alchemist bent forward in the same instant, placing his hands to the array as the woman's nails sank into his scalp and face, gouging vicious cuts into his skin. If he felt pain, he showed no sign of it. There was only the light of success in his eyes as the power built in the room, sending crackling energy through the lines of the design and activating it in a blaze of blinding, hoary light. In a heartbeat, Ed was back at the threshold of the gate. The beautiful place that had formed the canvas for a nightmare became nothing but a blur of flashing color as it vanished from sight, replaced by the familiar jaundiced colors of the gate's realm. On either side of him, the massive timber doors were groaning as if in pain. And when he looked over his shoulder, he saw the darkness bulge alarmingly, moving like a creature thrashing against a trap. Silver light lanced across it, giving the shadows a mottled look. He could feel the power rushing out from the portal, saturating the plane with its strength. Air, thick with the tang of alchemy, caught in his throat, filling his nose and mouth with its metallic edge. Looking back at the slim window to that other place, he saw that the house had collapsed. The power of the alchemy within its walls had torn it apart, making it a grave for all those inside. The alchemist emerged from the nearby haze, his face hollow and emotionless. He walked like a soulless thing, utterly without feeling. There was no sign of apology on his face, and no evidence of any guilt. Ed itched to lash out, to make this facsimile of the man feel as much pain as his victims. But it would be useless. You couldn't punish a ghost. Death had already deprived him of anything worth having. As the alchemist brushed past him and stepped into the waiting night, the mist around the gate began to crackle and pop, seething until the air sang in high, frenzied notes. Ed winced, pressing his hands to his ears, but it made no difference. The sound crept in through his bones, making his head pound and his teeth ache. Something flashed on the ground, scorching its way across the featureless earth in lines of brilliant light. The alchemist's array complex sketched itself out as energy arced from one line to the other, faster and faster, brighter and brighter, until Ed could not bear to look. Around him, the dead, breathless air began to stir, picking up to a breeze before growing into a gale that whipped his hair around his face and pushed at his back, plucking at his t-shirt with determined claws. One loud, explosive sound rang out, and something black and indistinguishable shot from behind him, lunging over his shoulder and wrapping itself around the faint, phantom-like shape in the middle of the array. It writhed and flowed like living ink, sucking at the light until the entire scene was saturated in splashes of tangled, torturous monochrome. Finally, the storm abated, the sharp wind dying down to nothing but a breath before it faded completely. The array had gone, erased by the blankness of the world in which the gate stood, but its work was done. The alchemist's dream had been made reality, and Ed could only stare at the prone creature. He had killed chimeras before, forcing himself to believe that it was an act of mercy to put those strange things out of their misery, but he had not seen anything like this. It was not the animal with a voice that Tucker had created from members of his family, nor a hybrid, perfectly human with special abilities, like Martha. It was something out of myth, the kind of thing that belonged between the pages of a fairy tale, not in the real world. Bitterly, he hoped it was dead. He wanted to pretend that there was no way such a thing could really exist, but he could see the rise and fall of its human shoulders with every breath it took. Her dark hair spilled over her face, but it did nothing to hide what she had become. Her bare torso was covered in a faint sheen of translucent scales, clinging to her human shape like an expensive gown. Across her stomach, the snakeskin darkened, becoming emerald green and black as it thickened and covered the coiled tail that was all that remained of her legs. The muscular length of flesh shifted, the scales rasping softly against one another as she began to stir. A rays glimmered among the patterns on her skin, shifting in and out of sight at random. Where each one bloomed and faded, a red fluid welled up, glistening like blood as it oozed from between the scales. When it hit the ground, it solidified, creating tiny fragments of glassy stone that shone like rubies. "Those are red stones," Ed murmured, stepping back as the woman groaned and rolled over, her eyelids fluttering open and her dark eyes darting around as she tried to understand her surroundings. "How?"
"They're weak, practically useless," Kaleo replied. "It's only when she feeds that they become something more potent. It was the way she was designed. The blood of her prey gives the stones power. The man who created her made sure that part of the array linked her intrinsically to the power of the gate. She was not an alchemist, but he gave her some small level of control over the power behind alchemy. It made her different, something above and beyond anything ever created." The words were hushed with awe, as if he could not help but be impressed by what the alchemist had done.
"Why?" Ed asked, flinching despite himself as her crazed, bloodshot eyes swept over the gate, taking in the vast edifice. She snarled, fangs pricking her own lips and drawing blood, but she seemed not to notice.
"Why would anyone create something like her?"
"I do not know. The alchemist's motives were not those of a sane man. He wanted to make her powerful, a lover worthy of his status, but he could not resist the opportunities to put his own theories to the test. It was an obsession, but he gave her the strength to survive, to break away from here and return to your world. She terrorized the nations for centuries before she was trapped within the gate, locked away like the animal she is. When it was destroyed, she was weak and formless, but she still had strength enough to escape through the channel Carmine left."
Ed shook his head, watching the woman's attractive face twist and twitch with insane hunger. She hauled herself up, dragging her body along with her arms as the snake's tail writhed behind her, lacking the coordination to propel her away from the gate. Dark arms were already reaching out, trying to reclaim her into the shadows. But every time one of them touched her, there was a snap of power, and they recoiled again as if in pain.
"It's about more than just strength," Kaleo continued. "It's about ambition and will. It takes a massive form of passion to escape the clutches of the gate. Love, hate, they're both their own kind of hunger. She was not the only one to be set free."
What else? Ed demanded, watching as Lamia clawed her way towards the rift that led to the warm, sunny world she had occupied as a human. What else did Carmine let back into Amstress? There was a pause, thick and heavy, before a voice replied. Kaleo's childish tones were gone, replaced by the calm words of the gate alone. A homunculus. The first, the strongest. We would expect nothing less from a transmutation by Hohenheim of Light. Reality surged back, hitting Ed's senses like a battering ram. His fingers curled against the water-slicked stone of the tunnel wall, and he almost slumped to his knees as the stench assailed his nose, making him gag and retch. A dead, dull beat of pain thrummed in his head, making him feel as if his skull was splitting in two. Tendrils of hair stuck to the sweat on his forehead, and his muscles were shaking as if he had just run a marathon. Fuck, he hissed, opening his eyes and blinking at the darkness. The others were gone, too intent on finding Alicia to notice that he had fallen behind. The array on his forehead was giving off a weak blue glow, but it was not enough to see by. Grimly, he staggered forward, trying not to think about what he might be treading in. He didn't even dare reach out to the wall to guide himself along. It was a sheer fluke that he had not touched an array when the gate had swept him away. The last thing he wanted to do was activate any one of them, large or small. After a few agonizingly cautious paces, he stopped, knowing he couldn't go on like this. He needed light. Without it, he was defenseless and half-blind, and the gloom was only getting thicker as he inched further into the depths. He had never really tried fire alchemy, had never really had the need, but if Roy could do it, then how hard could it be? A single array that sprang to mind changed before he had the chance to clap his hands, twisting itself into three separate disks in his mind's eye. As soon as his palms came into contact with one another, the darkness vanished, chased away by a flare of blue-white flame. Ed flinched away from the heat, shutting his eyes instinctively against its intensity, as around him the arrays on the walls hummed in a discordant melody, reacting to the surge of power he had just unleashed. Sweat ran down the bridge of his nose as, next to him, the fire continued to burn, consuming nothing but air. It spat every time a drop of water got caught in the heat, and puffs of steam drifted upward. Roy always made it look so easy. He ignited the air as if it really took no more effort than a click of his fingers. But to keep even a small flame burning on gases alone required immense concentration. It was a constant expenditure of power. No wonder Roy only used his alchemy when he really needed it. Cuffing the moisture from his face, Ed glanced around, seeing the tunnel in true light for the first time. The bricks were old and worn, pitted with age and erosion. They ran with pink, rotten water, seeping down from the ground where rain mixed with the blood from the slaughterhouse. He had always imagined the sewers to be crawling with rats and other pests, but this place was lifeless. Nothing disturbed the puddles, and there was no sound but the steady drip of water and, in the distance, the gush of the main flow as it worked its way down into the dark. Ed swore again. How the hell was he meant to find the others to warn them? When he had first heard Alicia's cry for help, his instincts had told him that something was not right, but he had ignored the creeping uncertainty, thrusting it aside. Now he knew what had bothered him so much. Alicia had probably been at home with Gracia when Hughes had left. It was half an hour's drive from there to the slaughterhouse. It would take ages to walk, especially for a child. There was no way she could have got here alone in that time. Even if she had been snatched from her mother, then there were too many guards for anyone to bring her into the culvert where the nest was, and there were miles of sewer under Central. How had she ended up close enough for them to sense her cry for help? How had she even known her father would be there to hear her? It was all too convenient and well-timed. Now, it was like Ed's eyes had been opened. The whole thing looked like a trap, and the others were heading into it at a sprint. If the gate was right, if Envy had slipped through at the same time as Lamia, then there were probably two monsters down here. At least the Serpent Woman kept the face she was given. With Envy around, trust became impossible. Anyone could be the enemy, the snake in their midst. There was no real way of telling until it was too late. With Lamia providing a constant source of red stones, increasing the potency every time she ate, it was entirely possible that the homunculus had gathered more strength than ever before. With a quick shake of his head, Ed broke into a sprint, trying to concentrate on where he was putting his feet and keeping the flame alive all at once. The pounding in his skull increased, making his jaw ache and his vision blur as it intensified. But he had to ignore it. Every second he wasted could cost one of the others their lives. If they had all stayed together, it would have been more difficult for Envy to get close enough for an attack. But now all he had to do was take on Ed's appearance, and the others wouldn't even question his presence. They had no reason to suspect anything was wrong, and Envy would have the opportunity he needed to hurt or kill whoever he pleased. Would they even realize, or would they think that Ed had betrayed them? No, they knew him better than that. Al would never believe Ed capable of causing him pain, and surely Roy would never think that he could be his lover one minute and his enemy the next. Ed swallowed hard, feeling sick at the thought. He couldn't let that happen, couldn't let that thing take his face and betray the people he cared about. Maybe the others had the faith in him to know immediately that something was wrong. Perhaps they would recognize Envy as an imposter despite his masks. But what if they didn't? What if their last thought as the homunculus lashed out was that Ed had turned against them? Despite the pain in his head, he sped up, finding a long, steady stride as his breath rasped between his lips. The air was vile, coating his tongue with a foul taste. But he ignored it as the puddles became more dense on the ground, and the still, stagnant water finally began to flow as the floor sloped downwards. Walkways rose up, flanking the putrid channel. The paving was cracked and slick with wet, but it was better than slogging through the rapidly deepening water. Ed continued to run, fighting to stay upright as his boots slithered and slipped. Beside him, the flame had become edged with a pallid, sickly green, reflecting the panicky nausea that was making his stomach roll. Its wavering light spread out ahead of him, and he swore viciously, skidding to a halt as he stared at the branching tunnel. The right-hand one was a steep downward slope, sending the water surging into the darkness. The left was flat and almost dry. There was no sign of anyone else. No running footsteps echoed back to him, and no ribbons of flame flickered in the darkness ahead. Which way had they gone, and just how far ahead could they have gotten? It felt as if the gate had held him in the clutches of its memory for hours. But was it really that long, or had it only been a few minutes? Groping in his pocket, Ed pulled out his watch, ignoring the flat gleam of the silver as he flipped open the lid and stared at the face. After a moment, he held it up to his ear, scowling as he heard no sign of life from the mechanism. It was more of a status symbol than a timepiece, flashed to bored officials to gain access to restricted areas or get his way in an argument, and he was always forgetting to wind it up. For all he knew, he had been down here for days. Shoving the watch back in his pocket, Ed ran his hands through his hair, scowling as he tried to find some kind of sign to tell him which way to go. A flicker of orange in the corner of his eye made him look toward the left-hand passageway. The arrays that had been in the main tunnel were etched into the wall here, too, and each one was burning, their lines licked with hot light and sparkling like jewels. The right tunnel was dark. There were no marks on the stone walls except the pitted erosion of water and time. Edging closer, he tried to peer into the left-hand tunnel, but the flame could only cast so much light. Beyond that, the darkness was like a barricade. No arrays glowed in the shadows. It was dead and breathless and still. Glancing over his shoulder, he raised an eyebrow, staring at the clear trail of designs that glimmered in his wake like the tail of a comet. None of them were active, but nor were they dormant. It was as if they had awareness and were waiting for their moment to spring to life.
The scientist in him couldn't resist a simple experiment, and he took a few steps down the left tunnel, watching as more arrays began to glow. Were they responding to the light of the flame? No, that couldn't be right, or they would have reacted to Roy's alchemy and left a clear path for Ed to follow. Instead, they seemed to sense his presence, and the lines ignited like flowers, opening their petals to the sun. With every step he took, more began to glow, and he could feel the air coiling with the thick power he had grown so used to over the past few weeks. It filled his lungs with every breath, making his nerves sing and his heart thud beneath his ribs. A prickle of heat spread across his chest, and the subtle warmth of the scar on his torso began to build. When they had first seen the arrays back at the nest, everyone's immediate conclusion had been another mad alchemist, lost within the depths of his power. But Ed could not forget the shifting, changing designs he had seen blossoming over the Lamia's scales. They had been eclectic and random, just like those all over the walls. Kaleo had said the Serpent Woman had been tied to the power behind the gate, linked intrinsically by the array that had turned her into something out of nightmares. If the sigils on the walls were her doing, then perhaps they were reacting to the fragment of the gate in him, sensing it like a dog picking up the scent. Ed jerked his head up, staring into the uninformative shadows as a soft sound reached his ears. It was a gentle whispering, like the hush of sand blowing across the desert. Or, he realized, the rasp of scales sliding along the ground. If the arrays could sense what hid inside him, then Lamia would certainly detect its presence. The gate made a beacon of him, a bright light of power in the velvet blackness. He swallowed tightly, taking a step back as he fought the urge to turn and run back to the city above. Up there, he could fight this thing. But down here, he was disoriented, weak and crippled by the darkness, and cramped by the endless curved walls. Grimly, he lifted his chin and straightened his shoulders. He had never run away from things before, no matter how horrific. He was not about to start now. Forcing himself to stop and listen, he realized that the sound was growing more distant, fading away until his ears buzzed with the strain of the silence all around him. Either she was running from him, or she had better prey to chase. Hawkeye had mentioned something about possible survivors, and he wondered if Lamia was slithering after someone who had escaped. He had seen blood back at the culvert opening and noticed some of the bones from the nest had been scattered across the ground. Someone must have thrashed and kicked, fighting desperately to escape the creature's clutches. Perhaps they had succeeded. He would bet his next paycheck that Lamia ate fresh meat. Snakes were not scavengers, and eating anything that was not freshly dead would revolt the human part of her. There had not been enough blood at the nest to suggest a recent kill, so even if the kid had not got away from her, she had not eaten them straight away. Did she have a lair deeper in the sewers where she could store those she captured until she was ready to feed? Either way, he was not getting any closer to finding answers by standing around. Drawing in a determined sigh, Ed walked forward, no longer sprinting recklessly ahead, but taking his time and searching for any sign of friend or foe. Whether he was the hunter or the hunted, he had to track down Lamia and stop her. It was his blood that Carmine had used to open a conduit back from the gate's plane to Amstress. If he had found it sooner, if he had taken the time to go back to the array and make sure that it was as inactive as he thought, neither Lamia nor Envy would have found their way back to Central. He had to put them both back where they belonged. Here, away from the main flow of the sewers, the air smelt musty and disused. The drain was mostly dry. It would probably only fill during heavy storms or when the snow melted, and a long, dry summer meant that the mud in the bottom had turned to packed dust. Small billows curled around his boots with every step, settling over his footprints and obscuring them from view. With no daylight or distinguishing features, it was impossible to tell how far he walked, but it felt like miles. Once in a while, he would hear something and freeze, only to realize that the noises were filtering down from the city far above his head. The sewers themselves were calm.
There was nothing to keep him company except the slow, steady glow of the arrays in his wake, and the fire flickering at his side. Rounding yet another corner, Ed saw something small lying in the dust. It looked like a scrap of fabric, and he gently stirred it with his toe before crouching down to pick it up. The green cloth was grubby and stained, but it didn't seem to have been here long. It formed a band like something that might fit around someone's head, and two strips, tattered and frayed by a struggle, hung down from the main part. Touching one of the stains, he realized it was wet and tacky, and his fingers came away smudged red with blood. It wasn't much, definitely not a fatal wound, and that meant that Hawkeye was right. Someone down here was still alive, or at least they had been an hour ago. A rough, gritty sound made him look up, eyes wide as he stared at the twisting tunnel ahead. The corners obscured his view, making it impossible to see what was coming. But it was definitely getting closer. In a flash, Ed lunged to his feet, pressing back to the far wall before extinguishing the flame at his shoulder. Around him, the arrays lent a hellish, ruddy glow to the shadows. They did nothing to light the sewer, but Ed could feel the power in them coiled tight, sending tendrils of warmth skittering across his skin. Mutely, he pressed his palms together, transmuting his arm into a blade as his muscles tightened, ready to pounce. The designs on the walls flared, and he hissed a curse as the strange, haphazard sound stopped. Whoever it was must have seen the wax and wane of light ahead. They knew that there was something in the tunnel with them, and the silence pressed like a cloth over Ed's ears. He shifted his weight, creeping along inch by inch as he stared into the darkness. The dim glow from the arrays played tricks with the shadows, serving only to define the darkness. To all intents and purposes, he was blind, and he swallowed hard as he struggled to discern anything from his surroundings. His own heartbeat drummed in his ears, and there was nothing in the air but the dry, dusty smell of the disused drain and the faint taste of alchemy. A glimmer of something made him jump, and he scowled as he realized it was the array on his forehead glowing with the familiar blue light. Perhaps it had been doing it all along. It was so normal to him that he often ignored it. But now it was a fragment of bright sapphire amidst crimson and black. With a mental curse, he realized that it would give him away, a moving point of light in all this gloom. As soon as the thought crossed his mind, a shadow shifted in front of the arrays ahead. Before he could even draw breath, the darkness stirred, and a heavy weight barreled into him, knocking the air from his lungs. Stars exploded across his vision as his head was smashed forcefully against the brickwork. He grappled clumsily with his attacker, trying to block the frantic punches he couldn't even see coming. Anger took over, erasing everything with its red haze. There was no fucking way he'd come this far just to be killed by something in the sewer. With a snarl, he wrenched himself away, twisting aside and kicking with all his strength. It connected with what felt like a leg, and there was the thud of someone collapsing to the floor with a cry of pain. A second later, Ed's feet were knocked out from under him, sending the arrays on the wall wheeling like constellations as he fell. Before he could even blink, there was a weight on top of him, and fingers wrapped around his throat, pressing down on his windpipe as they shook him like a dog would a rat. "Where's my brother? What did you do to him? What did you do?" Ed's eyes widened. He may not have heard that voice for a couple of years, but he still knew it instantly. In a flash, he whipped up his arm, forcing the hands away before he scrambled back, lifting the automail blade defensively so that he was ready to slash and hack if he had to. Hastily, he clapped, and the flame jumped to life, filling the tunnel with burning light and casting the features of his attacker in a warm glow. Russell Tringham knelt in the dust, his breath panting between parted lips. He was dusty and bloody, and Ed could see more than one bruise beginning to darken the younger man's pale skin. Gray eyes widened in recognition, but he didn't let his guard down. His whole body was painfully tense, as if he did not believe what he was seeing. He shifted his weight back, hands clenched into fists as he stared, waiting for Ed's next move.
"He is not a homunculus."
Ed rolled his eyes at Kaleo's words. He could see that for himself. Russell's presence might be unexpected, but he knew he was real. Envy was a master of disguise, but there were some things he could not imitate. The homunculus did not understand fear, and Russell's face was a picture of deep, dark panic that could never be faked.
"Ed?" Russell rasped, taking in everything from the automail to the glowing array between Ed's eyes. He frowned doubtfully, and Ed remembered that he hadn't seen the Tringhams since before he had retrieved Al's body.
"It's me, Russell," Ed confirmed, slowly lowering his arm and transmuting the blade back into a hand. He could see the lingering disbelief on the younger man's face, knowing he must have seen something to make him disbelieve the proof of his eyes. Holding his palms out in surrender, Ed tried to think of something he could say to convince him. "I met you in Xenotime. You were pretending to be me so you could carry on your father's research working for McGeer. Me and Al saved you and Fletcher." Russell narrowed his eyes suspiciously, still hunkered like a cornered animal wondering whether to fight its way out. Yet there was something vulnerable about him. He took a deep, shuddering breath, swallowing tightly before he whispered, "That doesn't prove anything. Anyone could know that." He couldn't keep the hope out of his voice, and Ed realized that Russell was probably desperate to believe it was really him, to think he had an ally in this dark labyrinth. "Besides," he said, "you got it wrong. We saved you."
"Like hell you did," Ed muttered, scowling at the idea.
"Look, it's me, all right. We don't have time to fuck about. Where's Fletcher?" It shouldn't have been possible, but Russell's face grew paler. He looked sick and broken with despair.
I don't know. I stopped for just a minute to look at some textbooks in a shop window.
Russell sighed miserably, looking away as he carried on. "He was being a brat, wanted my attention about something. I told him to shut up, just for 1 minute. I didn't think anything of it when he went quiet. But when I looked around, he wasn't there anymore."
"You lost him?" Ed asked incredulously.
"Shut the fuck up," Russell snapped. "It wasn't like that. The street was crowded and I thought he just wandered off. When I saw him in the distance following someone, he wasn't being dragged or forced. Just following. I ran after them, but I couldn't catch up. When they came down here, I didn't know which way they went."
Ed frowned, shaking his head as he got to his feet.
"Did you see who Fletcher was with? It must have been someone he thought he knew. Between the two of you, he's the only one with brains. He's not dumb enough to just tag along after some stranger."
"It must be you," Russell muttered miserably, getting unsteadily to his feet. "No one else could possibly be so annoying."
He looked around, as if the walls, floor, and endless darkness were all more manageable than meeting Ed's eyes.
"Look, it doesn't matter who I thought I saw. It's not possible."
Ed hesitated for a second before changing tack and asking,
"Who else did you think I could be? You didn't seem sure that you could trust what you were seeing."
He paused, seeing the wariness in Russell's expression as clear as day.
"You still don't."
Russell crossed his arms, his lips pressed into a grim, tight line before he shrugged.
It looked like our father. It looked like Fletcher was following our dad, but once they were off the street, I thought I saw him change into someone else. Different face, hair, clothes, just like that. He grabbed Fletcher and dragged him away. I heard screams, heard him begging to be let go."
He ran both hands through his hair, clutching at his head as he hunched his shoulders.
"I've been looking for hours. I keep hearing things, but I can never find anyone. This place is a fucking maze."
A small, half-hysterical laugh escaped Russell's throat, sounding almost like a sob. "For a minute, I really believed it was him. I really thought that, I don't know, I thought that Dad had come back to us. I'm a fucking idiot."
Ed winced internally, not knowing what to say. Hope was a painful thing, and it was almost impossible to kill completely.
The Tringhams had been fending for themselves for years now, growing up as best they could, but it seemed that part of Russell still wanted to believe his dad was out there somewhere.
"You need to concentrate on finding Fletcher," Ed said firmly.
What brought him down here used your father's appearance to grab him without a fight. At his shoulder, the flame got a little brighter, giving him the light he needed without any conscious demand from him. Come on, we might not have much time.
What's going on?
Russell demanded, hurrying to keep up as Ed set off. What are you even doing down here? And where's Al?
He's here somewhere.
You lost him? Russell asked mockingly, mimicking Ed's earlier question. Looks like I'm not the only careless one.
He's with a load of soldiers, unlike Fletcher, Ed snapped. We found some remains and arrays in one of the culverts. Not everyone in the army buries their head in the sand and hopes their problems will go away. We were investigating and I got separated from the others.
Remains? Ed whispered, his expression stiff with fear. What kind of remains?
Human, Ed replied, knowing he couldn't sugarcoat the truth. Children's bones, mostly. There's a kind of chimera living down here. She feeds on them. The thing that looked like your father was probably catching prey for her.
Wait, you're saying that there's some kind of monster living under Central? Are you even listening to yourself? You sound completely insane. How do you even know? Have you seen it?
Sort of. Ed looked over his shoulder, seeing the sick dread on Russell's face. The younger man was in denial, desperate to do anything but acknowledge the possibility that his little brother might be some creature's next meal. Reaching into his pocket, he pulled out the cloth he had found and handed it over.
Look, that's Fletcher's hat, isn't it? I found it not long ago. He's been here, and the bloodstain's still warm. He's probably still alive. But I don't know how much longer we've got. I know it's hard to believe, but you're just going to have to trust me.
Ed waited impatiently until, finally, Russell nodded in agreement, keeping close to his heels as they walked, following the serpentine path. Their footfalls were the only sound in the thick, still air, measuring out the precious minutes with each step. Rounding another corner, Ed swore viciously, ignoring the flames hiss and spit at his side. The tunnel had widened out, and they stood at the junction like the hub of a wheel. 8 more drains, some broad and wide, others barely big enough for him to walk down, branched off like spokes leading away into the darkness. Shreds of skin littered the floor, scales gleaming like emeralds in the light. Little human things, scraps of cloth, a doll, a school bag, had been thrown aside like rubbish. The only testament to the children who had already fallen victim to the Lamia's appetite. How many had she eaten? A handful, a dozen, or more? Arrays were everywhere, running in thick swaths along the floor. Every tunnel had designs on the walls, and Ed closed his eyes in disbelief. Precious seconds were slipping away, and he had no clue which direction would get them closer to Fletcher. If Lamia was the one somehow creating these arrays, then the passages where they were the densest should be the ones she used most often. But they were thick everywhere, creating a chaotic overlap of lines and circles until they lost all definition.
You're lost, aren't you? Russell demanded, his voice twitching with an edge of panicky hysteria. My brother is in the hands of something, and you're lost!
He was pacing back and forth like a caged animal, his hands clenching spasmodically into fists.
I should have known following you was a mistake.
Shut up, Russell. You were going the wrong way entirely. If you hadn't run into me, you'd be back on the street by now, and Fletcher wouldn't have a chance. Ed snapped, turning towards one or more likely-looking tunnels, watching the walls ignite with a sullen, bitter crimson. The arrays were so dense that there were only pinpricks of black stone amidst all of the trailing lines. The floor sloped steeply downwards, and a shallow, sinuous gully had been swept in the dust. Glinting along the edges like blood were tiny fragments of red stone, and he reached down to pick one up. It was glassy sharp beneath his fingertips, drawing blood. In the blink of an eye, the stone was gone, melting into his skin as the arrays in the bricks burned brighter. Licking his lips, he drew a shaky breath, pushing aside the tight thrill of trepidation that uncurled in his stomach. He could feel the presence of the gate inside him, hotter than ever before as it blazed in his chest, pulsing in tandem with the beat of his heart. How much stronger would it get? The deeper into the sewers he got, the more he felt its presence in his mind. It was no longer a whisper of knowledge, but a leaden weight, pressing down on the back of his neck. It was as if the presence of Lamia had stirred up a hornet's nest of its memories, and snatches of false recollections kept surfacing in Ed's mind. "Hey, are we just going to stand here or what?" Russell asked, grabbing Ed's shoulder and shaking him out of his thoughts. "What did you find?" Ed blinked, frowning for a second before he motioned to the shadows. "It's this way. Lamia's been here recently. If we find her, we'll probably find your brother." He began to lead the way, looking back as Russell hesitated. The younger man was looking at him doubtfully, and Ed didn't miss the fact that Russell's gaze kept darting up to the array between his eyes. "Are you coming?" "Of course. If I leave you to rescue Fletcher, you'll fuck it up." Ed idly flipped him the finger, trying to focus his mind on what was around him as he made his way down the uneven slope of the tunnel. Shouldn't he have seen something of the others by now? There had been nothing, no sight, no sound, no trace, that they had ever set foot down here, and all he could think was that he lost them in the dense night, running right into Envy's grasp. "Did you hear that?" Russell whispered, making Ed jump. "Listen!" A constant gushing sound reached his ears, monotonous and unchanging. "Water," he muttered, glancing at the bricks to his right. Previously they had been dry, but now they were damp and glistening. Droplets magnified the lines of the arrays strangely, giving them a mottled look. Snakeskin, still supple and warm, lay on the floor in tatters, scratched off against the rough wall. Ed picked up a small piece, turning it over in his hands and tipping it into the light of the flame. "We're getting closer." Before long, the floor had turned into mud, and rivulets of water twisted ever downwards, hesitating in pools before carrying on into the dark. Finally, the tunnel opened out into a large natural cavern. All around the other walls, other culverts gaped like mouths, spewing their contents into an underground river that flowed onwards and out of sight. Pinnacles of rock jutted like teeth from the surface of the water, and the roof overhead was lost in darkness. The mouth of the tunnel in which they stood was one of the lowest, leading out onto the rocky shore of the river where slim white bones and dazzling arrays littered the ground. Someone had poured oil into hollows in the rock, setting it alight and leaving it to burn hellishly in the eerie cave. Red stones were everywhere, twinkling like jewels, and Ed pressed his hand to his chest, swallowing tightly against the pull and surge of power coiling beneath his ribs. His palms itched to clap, and he curled them into white-knuckled fists to resist the urge. A small distance away, dangerously close to the river's edge, a body lay on the stone. It looked like a doll that had been thrown aside, all sprawled limbs and crooked legs. There was not movement, and at this distance, Ed couldn't even see if it was breathing. "Fletcher! Russell, wait!" Ed grabbed his arm, yanking him back before he could break free from the cover of the tunnel mouth. "Look!" He pointed to a shape, a hulking shadow in the gloom which stirred slowly. The flickering light of the oil lamps caught on the scales of her coiled tail, sending shimmying patterns along its massive length. After a few breathless seconds, she fell still again, pale fingers tightening around the pathetic bones that she had piled up at her side. "She's asleep," Russell whispered, licking his lips as he glanced to where his brother lay, prone and silent on the floor. He hesitated for a moment before creeping forward, ignoring Ed's hissed words as he inched forward, creeping around bones and burning oil. Huffing a breath of disbelief, Ed followed, trying to watch where he was putting his feet and keeping an eye on Lamia at the same time. More than once her face twitched, riddled with the same grief he had seen in what the gate had showed him. Now she looked almost sane, a victim, not a monster. "He's still alive, but he won't wake up," Russell hissed desperately, brushing his hands against Fletcher's face and hair, checking for broken bones even as he begged his little brother to open his eyes. "What do we do?" Ed knelt next to him, reaching out to feel the sluggish thud of Fletcher's pulse. There were two puncture marks on his arm, red and swollen. She bit him. The poison's probably what's keeping him unconscious. It stops him running away. He glanced at Lamia, his mind whirling. "You get him out of here. The glowing arrays should make a trail right back up to the street. There'll be soldiers there. They can take care of you and Fletcher." "Wait, what about you?" "I've got to find Al and the others. If you meet anyone on their own on the way back through the tunnels, then don't trust them, no matter what they look like, understand?" The sharp bark of a gunshot cut off Russell's reply, splitting the air in half. It bounced back and forth from wall to wall, shredding apart the piece. Stone skittered down from the invisible roof, landing in the river with splashes that sent spray flying into the air. When the noise finally faded away, the rushing of the river continued in its wake, but now there was an eerie harmony to its roar, a soft, seductive whisper of scales sliding across one another, lending the faintest rasp to the air. In the gloom, a pair of dark eyes opened, reflecting the flickering fires in their depths as they met Ed's gaze. Lamia was awake, and she was hungry.